There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This week we're discussing parental alienation syndrome, when one parent turns a child against the other parent. While common when a couple are separating or getting divorced, this could also take place in a marriage and is the cause of great distress for many. I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff. She's a clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She'll be here to guide us through this topic and, most importantly, answer your questions and address your concerns. Good afternoon, Sabine.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm feeling a bit anxious about this topic, to be honest, because I feel like it's very common and also very sinister, and it really unsettles me, to be honest. And it's, I think a lot of people are going to find having you here very useful, because they might not have identified that this has happened in their family or to them as a child, or is actually happening to them right now. So I'm really grateful that you're here to guide us through this. So if you've got any questions for Sabine, you can get in touch on the text line 4001. You can message us on the Dubai Eye Messenger app, or you can give us a call 04-423-1010. Now, I think we'll have a little chat about some news stories as well before we get into our main topic. Now, it was National Siblings Day yesterday. I forgot about it, so apologies to my brother. And a study's come out saying what career you're most likely to have is based on whether you're the oldest, middle or youngest child. Are there any kind of common characteristics about sibling order from your point
of view? Absolutely, of course. I mean, the first born child is always the perfectionist, the most ambitious. The second born child is usually described as the peacemaker or the glue or the sandwich child. And the third born child is usually the most spoiled or
indulged.
Yeah, exactly. The most indulged child. Definitely. I mean, your birth order plays a big role in so many things in your life.
Career-wise, I think this is really interesting in terms of what you just said there. So explorers and composers are apparently very common amongst younger children. Artists are very common amongst only children. And in terms of eldest rock stars, astronauts and scientists and engineers. So I think the astronauts, scientists and engineers is actually speaking very much what you say in terms of being ambitious and precise and focused. And in terms of middle, the peacemaker role, politicians actually very common with middle children, but also CEOs and authors. So interesting one there on the, what are you, where do you fit into your family, Sabine?
I'm the firstborn.
Me too. Are you a perfectionist?
Try not to be. I try not to be. But of course, I mean, the firstborn child has this tendency to always please the set of adults that are raising him. So it's all trial and error. Are they going to smile? Are they going to shout? Are they going to be upset? So this is why, I mean, the firstborn child is always wanting to please. You know,
that's
wanting to get a positive reaction.
But also, I think as the eldest, you're the kind of the pioneer. You're the one that's having to, you know, test the boundaries a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
See what
you're
can get
away. You're the guinea pig as well, because
big
your
time.
Parents are younger and they don't have, you know, the experience of raising a child. So there's a lot of trial and error with the firstborn.
Don't say that.
But it's true.
And now that I've got two children, I'm thinking, I mean, there are things that I did with my first that I haven't done with my second, because
no,
I simply haven't got the time. And then I feel like I'm being a neglectful mother, because I'm like,
no,
I know there's only one photo of you printed off, but you know, we do love you just as much.
I don't have any photos of my third, if it makes you feel better.
It really does, actually. Thank you, Sabine.
You're welcome.
Now, talking about happiness, I think we talk a lot about generation, the younger generation, having so many pressures put upon them, economic, social media, jobs, education, relationships as well. And a new study's come out, this is in the UK, with the UK Youth Index, according to the Prince's Trust. And they interviewed young people to share their reasons for why the happiness index in 16 to 25-year-olds is so low. It showed that 3 out of 5 regularly feel stressed about jobs, and many with half saying they've experienced mental health problems.
Yeah.
Does that resonate with you? Does that sound like...
Of course. And I think it's similar in many different countries, many different communities. It's the millennial struggles, you know. It's more common than we think.
A 19-year-old called Steph said this. Schools put an unbelievable amount of pressure on young people with studying. For me personally, I feel so stressed and anxious in school that I suffer panic attacks. One time I broke down crying in the middle of class. Schools must stop scaring pupils into studying by threatening that they'll be dropped from the course because this has a terrible impact on young people's mental health. Interesting point, obviously, with exams coming up as well. It's really interesting, you know, when you get past those exams and even you get to university and look back and go, wasn't that important? But at the time, it's everything. It's everything. You think that your whole future is hinging on results that you're going to be getting. And for some people, results can obviously go on to have huge impact in terms of university courses and acceptance and career. But for so many of us, we don't even get asked.
Absolutely. And it all depends on the parenting style of the parents as well, like how authoritarian they are, what are their expectations, are they very indulgent, neglectful, permissive. It all depends on how the authority figures in your life tackle these issues, you know, of performance. It's not everything is about performance and getting a specific result. We say that your child's mental health is more important than their grades.
Absolutely. Yeah. Certainly long term, far more important. In terms of the economic impact, a 19-year-old in Glasgow said housing prices and rent need to come down or young people are going to be living at home forever. It is inevitable. And in terms of social media, Theo, a 17-year-old, said people say we are lucky to have phones and all the technology when in reality it's like it's having a negative effect. People can't make mistakes anymore because it will always come back to haunt them. Every single stupid decision is forever saved online, which makes growing up harder as you have to learn and grow from these embarrassing things.
Very true.
Very true.
Yeah.
I am grateful every day that Facebook wasn't around when I was at university. There's a few interesting photos in terms of, you know, parties and nights out, but you had, you know, I can burn photographs, right? Happy days.
The little black book back in university.
That's right.
There's no Facebook.
It was a blessing. And finally, on the topic of loneliness, Harry, a 21-year-old student, says, although we are connected technologically like never before, there is a definite feeling of loneliness. I think much of this stems from a lack of community. The loneliness, constant competition, and the feeling of not being listened to or taken advantage of takes its toll. And I think that's right in terms of the community. We've moved so far away from that, about being surrounded by family. You know, families are more dispersed now. People are a lot more mobile. Yes. And while we have got things like, the, you know, your WhatsApp and your messaging and video calls, there's no replacement really for that grounded feeling of living in a community.
Yeah, we've spoken about this in previous radio shows. It's very sad to hear that people can feel lonely at such a young age. You know, I understand when you're in your 30s, you're career-oriented and so on, you're career-focused, but at such a young age to feel completely lonely and isolated while living in, you know, your community of origin is quite sad.
It's worrying. And interestingly, this this next story is from Yale. So Yale University has launched its most popular class ever, and it's to do with happiness. So really tapping into this fact that the younger generation, these millennials, they've done a course called Psychology and the Good Life, and roughly 300 people have signed up. Within 3 days, that figure more than doubled. After three more days, 1,200 students, or nearly a quarter of Yale undergraduates, were enrolled. Just goes to show how much a need they are
of having that kind of support, you know?
Absolutely. So this is a psychology course that's going to teach students how to lead a happier, more satisfying life in twice weekly lectures. Now, I saw an article in The Independent this morning, and my alarm bells always go off with articles like this. 8 simple ways to boost your happiness instantly.
What are they?
If only it was that easy. And you know, before I'd even read it, I was like, I know what this is going to be. I've read this article before. I've written this article before. Listen to upbeat music.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just annoying. If you're in a bad mood, sometimes you want to listen to miserable music and feel like you're not alone
in
your misery.
Exactly.
Have a walk. Imitating the gait of a happy individual can make you feel far more uplifted. You feel like a bit silly.
What my colleague said, make it till you fake it.
Fake it till you make it. And the same thing, smile. It might sound slightly sinister, but forcing yourself to smile can actually have a beneficial effect on your temperament. I feel like the smile has to reach the eyes. If you're smiling with just your mouth, it does just look creepy.
Helen, you must watch the video of Susan David. It's a TED Talk. It's about false positivity. And its, you know, impact on your feelings, like how we always advise people to falsely be positive and fake your smiles and so on. And
so would that lead into like affirmations and listening to positive affirmations and
things like that?
No,
this is different.
Just total fake positivity.
Yes, absolutely. And how it negatively impacts your mental health, because you have to learn how to deal with negative as well.
Of course, you've got to deal with the up and the down.
It's a very, very good tattoo.
So that's Susan Davis.
Suzanne David, she's a clinical psychologist who's done a lot of research on emotions, and her talk is on emotional intelligence, I think, and she tackles the concept of false positivity. Ooh. That we all walk around trying to do.
Interesting.
Throughout the day.
Choosing your colours can make an impact. Saying certain colours have been known to have varying effects on a person's mood. While black may influence feelings of sadness, red might incite emotional state. We're both wearing black today. Green has been found to inspire calmness, happiness and comfort. It also goes on to say cuddling a pet. Now that's always going to make me happy, to be honest. I'm on board with that. Appealing aroma, so scents can make a difference. Yes. Cake.
I wish it was that easy, you know.
If there's the promise of cake, then yeah, happy days. And exercising. And I would agree with that in terms of getting those kind of endorphins, boosted. And self-acceptance. Now, that to me does not speak of one of the eight simple ways. Oh, self-acceptance. Oh, I'll just accept myself and I'll be happy.
Yeah, it's like a button push.
Yeah.
Where is that button?
I don't know. You tell me. You're the expert. Now, when we come back, we're going to be getting onto our topic of parental alienation syndrome. If you have any questions for Sabine, do get in touch. This is On the Couch. Really lucky to be joined in the studio by Sabine, clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, to guide us through the topic of parental alienation syndrome. Now, this is when a parent turns a child or children against the other parent.
Yeah.
And it's actually very common. Can you tell us a little bit more about this syndrome?
Yes, I mean, the term was coined by Dr. Richard Gardner while he was working with, clients who were undergoing custody battles and so on. And he realized that, initially it was more the mothers, that some of the mothers are brainwashing the children to hate, to develop that kind.
Brainwashing is a very strong term.
I know.
Kind of psychologically speaking, is that it was almost like a reprogramming of these children against their fathers in many cases.
Exactly. So this is when it was tackled in the beginning. I just want to say that PAS does not only happen in divorce cases. It could also happen in intact couples, but that are highly conflictual and high conflict couples as well.
So what does this look like? This could be a parent bad-mouthing the other parent to the children.
It could be bad-mouthing actively, like your father is this and that.
Your mother did this.
Yes, absolutely. But intentionally.
So it's an intentional act. Basically, they go on a mission, for want of a better word, to alienate that child or children against a parent. So it's a campaign of denigration.
Absolutely. And it could be more subtle and more insidious. And it could be with nonverbal behavior, like rolling your eyes.
Huffing and puffing.
Exactly. Walking around, slamming on the table, slamming on the door. Just showing disapproval of, let's say, a child having had a good time with the father and reporting back. Or it could also be a threat of withdrawing love. Like if you go spend the weekend with your father, then I will not go to your football game in school. So there's a lot of manipulation as well as, working with the guilt, instigating guilt in the child. And just emotional. It is a form of child abuse.
So their goal then becomes to destroy the other parent's relationship with that child. And
unfortunately,
can they corral the children then into kind of acting on their behalf to collect information or kind of act as a spy?
Absolutely. The child becomes, children cannot defend themselves. Physically they can't, psychologically they can't. They are completely trusting of their parents because they're attachment figures. So they trust that whatever the parent says is correct. They do not question whether, their mother is good intentioned or bad intentioned with them. So it's like it's very easy for them to get involved in this parent alienation syndrome.
It's a real betrayal of trust, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I've got a clip here. This is Dr. Jennifer Harmon. She's Associate Professor of Psychology at Colorado State University and an accomplished teacher. She's published many peer-reviewed articles, and here she's explaining the possible society causes of parental alienation and how it affects children and families, from parents, step-parents, to the extended family members.
Our parenting stereotypes contribute to a problem known as parental alienation. Parental alienation involves a set of behaviors that one parent does to damage, destroy, or sever the relationship between their children and the other parent. These behaviors range widely in their severity and include things such as bad-mouthing the parent to the child and making that child afraid to be with that parent. Many parents who are alienated are falsely accused of abuse as a strategy to get custody. Psychologists have long documented these behaviors among divorced, separated, and even intact families. And parental alienation does not discriminate. It affects people of all racial groups, economic, and income levels. Many parents, grandparents, step-parents, and extended family members are affected by this problem. Based on my research, I estimate about 13% of parents in this room have been targets of parental alienation. That's over 22 million American adults alone. Some people have characterized parental alienation as a form of child abuse, and the impact on children is severe. Children consider both parents important for their identity, and when they are led to believe that one part of their identity is bad or doesn't love them, this has disastrous consequences for their development. Many alienated children develop psychological disorders, suffer academic decline, and have an inability to develop healthy relationships themselves. But parental alienation is a form of indirect aggression. The true target of this aggression is the other parent, and children are their weapons. Therefore, parental alienation is a form of domestic violence. And the impact on the targeted parent is also severe. Imagine your child suddenly believing horrible things about you, told by the other parent. Trying to correct them will not change their opinion of you, and in fact, typically pushes them closer to the alienator. Many parents that I've interviewed have not seen or spoken to their children in years. This is a form of unresolvable grief. And we often think that this is a problem between two parents who cannot get along. And it's not. It's typically one-sided. Yet many parents I've interviewed have sought court intervention to help them. And the judges tell them to kiss and make up, play nice. We don't tell victims of bullying to go and shake hands with their bully on the playground. It doesn't work that way. Parents can use parenting stereotypes to alienate their children very effectively. For example, if a divorced mother tells you that the father of her children doesn't care about them, and this is why he doesn't ever see them, how quickly are you to believe this? It's very easy to alienate fathers from their children. We have very negative stereotypes about them. They're deadbeat dads, they're abusive, they're absentee parents. Many alienated fathers I have interviewed have told me that their once close friends and neighbors suddenly believed horrible things about them without hearing their side of the story. It's very easy to alienate mothers when we can show that they are unmotherly. For example, if a mother leaves work early to pick up her children, how would you rate her abilities as a parent compared to a father doing the same thing? Mothers who violate traditional gender stereotypes are often punished. She's not seen as a good employee if she has to leave work early to pick up her children, and she's not seen as a good mother if she works. In fact, young children rate mothers who work as less effective parents as those who do not, even when their own mothers work. That's how deeply ingrained these stereotypes are. I've interviewed many mothers who were alienated from their children, who were the breadwinners of their families. And when they divorced, this was used against them, with claims that she only cared about her career and not her children. If a father tells you that the mother of his child has a mental illness and is unable to care for that child, how quickly do you believe that? Claims about mental illness, such as depression, are easily applied to women. And these labels are harder to shake for mothers than for fathers. So fathers can alienate very effectively if they can show that they are exemplary, which is not hard to do because we do not expect much of them in the first place, and if they can show that the mother is not motherly enough. Our rigid parenting stereotypes are hurting children and families.
Talking this afternoon about parental alienation syndrome, and I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff. She's the clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, here to guide us through this topic and, most importantly, answer your questions, hear your stories, and address your concerns. You can get in touch with the show. Now, Sabine, we heard a clip earlier. Yeah. This was Dr. Jennifer Harmon. She was talking about societal causes of parental alienation and how it can affect children and yes. families. You were nodding along throughout that clip.
Yes.
It's very powerful, huh?
It is a very powerful, TED Talk. Also, it's a very heavy subject, you know, because you can't really start to comprehend as a parent that how can someone do this to a child. Most of the time, the parent who does, the alienating parent, is not aware of the consequences, the psychological consequence. And if they are, they really don't care, because at that point, all they're thinking of is revenge. You
so
know,
it's a selfish act.
It is. The need for the parent to defend themselves against, you know, their ego injury. How dare you leave me for another woman? How dare you abandon me after 20 years of marriage? And so on. So it's a defense against the narcissistic injury is at the root of many high conflict couples and the behavior of parental alienation syndrome.
So why do parents do this? What's the
exactly,
crux of it?
Exactly, it's to gain that power back. They feel, okay, I've lost my husband for whatever reason. I don't have the financial support. I've lost the life that I was planning to have. What is the best way for me to get anything back? Turn the most precious thing that my husband has against him, or my wife. You know, because it is, both mothers and fathers do it, but in different ways. Fathers become more overindulgent, you know, they buy you expensive gifts.
Treats and
yes, absolutely.
Rules
so
are
it
out
becomes
the window.
Absolutely. And mothers are more, they instigate more your pity. Did you see what your father did? This is what he did. This is how he treated me. This is what he said. This is the woman that he left me for, and so on. Which actually, children should be protected from all of this information. Oversharing with children is also part of PAS. They become parentified children. I've had a child who is 6 come in, you know, because I do forensic custody evaluations for families. And I asked them to do some projective tests. She drew 2 children pushing 2 strollers with 2 babies inside. And this is a drawing of how she perceives her parents as babies that her and her sibling are taking care of.
Wow.
So she is the parentified child in this conflict.
And being exposed to adult issues and...
Yes, absolutely.
Really, actually very, very inappropriate. But can it be done on a subconscious level?
It could be done indirectly, absolutely. Again, with nonverbal communication, because you feel... Again, some of these parents are not aware of how much damage they are causing. And sometimes when you highlight it to them, they do stop and they do cooperate, depending on their personality as well, how much they're willing to tolerate frustration.
Sabine Scaff is joining us this afternoon to answer any of your questions and concerns. You can get in touch 4001. We've had a text that came in saying, my son was treated so badly by his ex-wife that after they separated, she told lies about him to the children, tried to stop him seeing them, and even told them that he didn't want to see them. It was heartbreaking and had an impact on my relationship with the 2 boys, as I can't get access either.
Very
and actually,
common.
That's a really interesting aspect there in terms of the grandparents having their relationship compromised by parental, grandparent alienation
syndrome as well.
Of course,
because you know the children become a bargaining tool. If
pawns.
You pay, yeah. If you pay that much money, then you get to see them one more time this month. If you don't pay me that much money, then they won't spend time with their grandparents over the summer. So the alienation extends itself to other family members as well.
We'd love to hear your story this afternoon. If this is something you're going through and could do with some support and advice from Sabine, do get in touch. Equally, if you're a child of divorced parents who has come through this, experienced this, have a positive or negative story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. Another message is asking for some advice here, and it can be completely anonymous. This is a difficult and sensitive topic,
of course.
Don't feel like you need to share too much information or even your name. Saying, thanks for this topic. I'm going through a divorce right now and my husband has moved out. He's always been a great dad, but recently the children have been telling me that he makes comments about me. They're asking questions about if I'm dating anyone or have a boyfriend or did when we were married. I'm brushing it off, but have a feeling he's behind it. What
of
can
course.
I do?
The children cannot come up with these questions on their own. You know, never underestimate the power of planting a seed. you don't have to say things explicitly out loud to a child. You can just suggest something. And then they could, if the children, they are emotionally clever enough to come up with their own scenarios as well. But this is definitely against the mother.
And could he, thinking from a custodial point of view, could he be asking questions like, oh, were you dating someone when we were married, in order to arm himself with more information when it comes to going to court?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, when you're separated from someone, there's immediate loss of control, total control over the other person. So definitely, I mean, the children are always used to figure out more information about the other parent, but that is different than severe PAS. You know, asking a question and not getting back the answer that you want and then stopping there is different of threatening your children to tell you exactly what's happening in the other parent's life.
I think that's what I find so disturbing about that. It's the emotional manipulation of the child. And I just wonder, the parent who's planting these thoughts or manipulating their behaviour, do you think they realise that down the line this is not going to work in their favour, that the children are going to, at some point, resent them from keeping them apart from that parent?
They're thinking short term, they're not thinking long term. So they're thinking of what kind of gains they can have now from that sort of manipulation. Gain custody, get more financial support, have,
gain,
you know, character
even.
Defamation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think that's... it's such a vulnerable time for everybody going through a separation or divorce. You know, child's psychological needs are, you're the expert, I presume would be greatly increased during or after a divorce. And they're, you know, living in the middle of an economic and an emotional roller coaster, really. Yes. There's guilt, there's confusion, there's fear, there's perhaps blame if the wrong thing is being said.
There is all of this, which, you know, triggers these kinds of behaviors because you want to have more control. And the only people who cannot defend themselves are the kids, because it's like they're like a blank slate. You can do whatever they want. You can convince them with whatever you want, and you can make them do whatever you want because they're under your mercy, ultimately.
I think that speaks to really putting your selfish needs aside or your blame aside and dealing with that child in a neutral, ideally positive way.
In high conflict couples, you need a lot of support from friends and family.
Here's my question, though. And this is me speaking very honestly. What if, let's say, hypothetically, my husband had walked out on me and I had a huge amount of blame and hatred, and he behaved appallingly. It would be very difficult for me to kind of keep those feelings to myself, even if he was to blame.
Yes, but it's not right for you to overshare with your children. You have the right to say, as an adult, as a parent,
this is what happened.
I'm upset, to be descriptive, but to overshare and to make them feel how you feel about their father is not right, because your relationship with him is that of a spouse. Their relationship with him is that of a parent. They will never feel about him the way you feel about him.
And equally, you know, I guess you chose that person at some point. You chose to have children with him, and you need to take responsibility for that. Dr. Phil, who he says, I've got two rules with children. You never, ever burden them with the situations they cannot control, and you do not ask them to deal with adult issues.
Absolutely not.
I think that's a lot easier said than done. I feel like human nature, that need for revenge, that need for sympathy, it would be so easy to override what you logically know you should be doing.
That is why you need to have a lot of emotional support from the right people.
Please do get in touch if you'd like to share your stories or have any advice. Here we've got Sabine here from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Got some text coming in we're going to come to. Or you can give us a call. I believe we've got Rami joining us on the phone. Hi, Rami. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us
how
this
are you?
Afternoon. Yeah, well, thank you. Difficult topic this afternoon, and I think one that a lot of people will be able to identify with. Can you tell us your story, Rami?
Yes. Actually, I've gone through a divorce 7 years back when my daughter was seven. And we have passed through many hostile areas. But eventually, it came up to a very positive situation and a very commendable story to say. In the beginning, we had a lot of fights, and we both got got very aggressive when it came to custody of my daughter, and how are we going to handle her and our relationship. But then eventually, me and my wife, we talked, and we could see that this is affecting the morale of Hannah, my daughter, and how it was going. So everybody became more calm and more understanding. And after so many years now, I could see that the result became very positive and very good for the environment that my daughter is living at the moment.
I think that's really admirable in the middle of a very, very difficult situation to put your daughter first and go, you know, put it aside, think about your priority.
Sure. And this is the message I want to give out to all the parents. They are destroying their children, and they can see a very bad result out of their greed to have them more or stay with them more. Or there got to be a sacrifice. I mean, decision was their divorce was their decision, and the children doesn't need to suffer because of decisions they make.
Thank you so much for this intervention. And ultimately, I mean, this is what we want to see happen. I mean, the what you did to save your child was to cooperate. And this is ultimately what
Absolutely.
We're looking for. You're a high conflict couple. You're divorced for a reason, but you're still the parents of that child, even though you're no longer married, and your responsibility lies towards that child. So cooperation, communication, and, you know, taking care of the well-being of your child is at heart of this.
Rami.
And it is not only financial responsibility.
Absolutely.
It's moral responsibility.
Absolutely.
And wanting the best for her and for her future and protecting her as much as you can. Rami, thank you so much for coming on. I think that's a really valuable insight there. Mm. And
Pleasure.
As you say, well done to both you and your ex-wife, and all the best for the future. Lots of texts coming in, and we'll get to them after this. I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff. She's a clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, to guide us through the topic of parental alienation syndrome. So talking about parental alienation syndrome this afternoon, when a parent who is angry at a spouse or ex-spouse accomplishments estrangement, really, for want of a better word, by painting a negative picture of the other parent with depreciating comments, non-verbal communication, creating blame, false accusations. They might even hoard the children, keep the parent
yes.
away from them, and try and basically thwart that other parent's attempts to be involved in their life. A question here, and they can, of course, be anonymous. I know we're dealing with a sensitive topic this afternoon, so no need to put names on there if you'd prefer not to. Question here, so what about a mother who walked out on her daughter 6 years ago and won't maintain phone contact? We were already split up when she left our daughter, and I had weekend contact every other week for 2 years. Then I was called by the parents who wanted me to collect my daughter. Her mum then disappeared for 2 years.
So the daughter lives with the father or with the grandparents?
I don't know. It sounds like she was with the grandparents for a time, and then the father was called to collect her, and then the mother disappeared for 2 years. Are there behavioral disorders at play here?
Yes, definitely personality disorders, because if we look at parent alienation syndrome or any type of manipulation or neglect or abuse, you know, emotional abuse, behind it there's always a personality disorder that is very specific, which is the narcissistic personality disorder, where parents with this type of disorder parent according to their own needs. So the child is viewed as an extension of themselves. It's self-centered, egocentric parenting, where the child is belongs, if you want, to the parent, and then the parent can dispose of the child as they please. So this is one of the most common disorders that we find in parent alienation syndrome.
We're going to hear now from Stephen. This is a father who wanted to remain anonymous, describing the impact on parental alienation from him as a father.
Stephen is from South Wales. We've hidden his identity to protect his child. For almost a year, he's been locked in a bitter battle with his ex-partner over contact time with his daughter. Stephen says his daughter's mother has tried to alienate him. His words are spoken by a member of the production team.
It's heartbreaking. There's not a day goes by where I don't think of my daughter. You know, I made memories with my daughter. We went to parks, ponds. We weren't one of those that stay in the house. We did everything together. Rather than counting down days to her birthday or anything else, something that she should be looking forward to, Instead, she's counted down days that she hasn't seen her father.
Stephen says false allegations have been made against him. This has meant going weeks without seeing his daughter while the claims are investigated.
It wrecks your life. It totally turns your life upside down. You end up suicidal. I'm a father. I'm just a dad, like all the other parents out there, fighting to see their children.
So upsetting to be in...
Yes. I've worked with parents who haven't seen their children for months now. And it's heartbreaking every time I listen to these stories. You have to keep in mind that sometimes any parent, whether they are, you know, in conflict or getting along, we all have this tendency when we're angry to badmouth or to say, oh, your father made me upset because he did this and that. But we refrain. And sometimes when we do it, or healthy parents, when they do it, which is quite different from parent alienation syndrome, there's always reparation and correction of information. It's different. We all want our kids to take our sides, but is it in their best interest? Mm-hmm. This is what we need to really think about.
And as you said earlier, you know, it's a selfish act. You're looking
Absolutely.
For validation from your child, and your child is not mature enough, is not emotionally
to
equipped
to protect themselves or
exactly,
to
make sense of the information that you're trying to communicate.
Absolutely, and it's not right because the other parent is equally responsible for that child, and there's no way you can ask them. It's not fair for the child to reject one parent if they are, you know, their mind is poisoned by this kind of information.
A nice positive message here saying, I'm a child of divorce and think I'm one of the lucky few who was not caught in the crossfires. My parents are best friends till now. We celebrate all holidays and birthdays together. And I have them to thank for giving me the most normal life during a divorce.
This is amazing. So you see, this is possible.
It is possible, but yes. I guess it would take a lot of work. It would take a lot of work to get past your own needs, your blaming.
Your own injury and
exactly.
your own need for,
acting out of hurt.
For vengeance and making the other person pay, I quote, pay in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Because we want to ultimately hurt the other person. We want them to suffer as much as they've made us suffer. But using the children is actually damaging to the children on the long run. It will not be as impactful on the other parent.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about those long-term effects that can have on the child when you decide to separate them from their parent. How can we overcome this? Stay with us. We're joined on the phone right now by Charles. Hi, Charles. I understand you're having a very upsetting situation at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Essentially, we broke apart with my ex-wife when we were living in Singapore. And she left with the three children. I didn't think there was anything I could actually do to stop her. And she took them back to France, to where she comes from. And then the children suffered quite badly, actually, particularly the eldest one became very depressed. And she was saying to them, you know, that it was just, you know, I was working too much, or I didn't care about them, this sort of thing. And there was also some domestic issues in the house as well between mother and children. And finally, there was an incident that happened in the UK, and the police were involved, and they removed the passports from my ex-wife, the British passports, their French and British passports. They gave them to me, and they said, go back to Dubai and try to, get on with a divorce and this sort of thing. So I came back with the two eldest boys, but the eldest boy refused to return. After speaking with her, she refused to come to Dubai, but then her father, I paid for her father to come, and he convinced the younger boy, who's six, to go back. But now since he went back and the eldest boy stayed here and she kicked off divorce in France, it's caused a lot of conflict. So she's sitting there, and she's done it when we've been on Skype and talking, saying that, you know, I sent the younger one back because I don't care about him, I don't love him, I didn't want him. She's done this many times. She's done this in front of the elder child as well, who stayed here with me. It's become very unpleasant. I haven't seen the two younger children now since last August.
Oh, wow.
As I understand it, I won't see them until they're adults.
So she's abducted them, but for want of a better word, she's taken them.
Well, abducted, but she has the law on her side, because She kicked off divorce in France, which means that you know, it's very difficult to do anything anywhere else. And they have, you know, the younger boy has called me. He WhatsApps me sometimes. He gets hold of a phone that I've given him when they left Singapore, and occasionally he WhatsApps me when she's out. You know, and he sent WhatsApps just the other day to say that he can't talk to me and the eldest boy anymore, otherwise he'll be punished. He called me on February, the last time before that was he WhatsApped me, and I called him back on February 14th. In fact, she was out and had left the phone, and he was just crying, saying it was the biggest mistake he had ever made leaving. But she continues to cut them off. They're cut off from almost the whole of her family, let alone mine as well now. They're cut off from grandfather, uncles, aunts, pretty much everyone except for her mother is not allowed to really sort of see them. They've just been isolated completely.
Charles, and it sounds very, so very toxic, it really does. Sabine, yes.
Hi, Charles, how are you?
What advice can we offer?
Thank you for going online with this, you know, and sharing your story with everyone else. How is your little one, the one that's staying with you?
He's fine. He's okay. When we had the chat on Saturday with the other boy, you know, I said to him, I said, you know, do you want to go back and be there to support him? You know, you do what you feel you need to do. And he just said, well, there's two very unhappy children there. I'm not sure I really want to go and make it three unhappy children. And he just said, even though it's very, very tough and he felt sad about it, he wasn't ready, wasn't prepared to go back.
Yeah, and he should not have to sacrifice, you know. He clearly finds his emotional well-being with you. Mm. Now it's time to try and see how you can get the other two to live with you. I'm not very versed in the legal system in France or in the UK or even in the UAE, but I think you can definitely, retaliate and ask for full custody if you have enough evidence of abuse.
The problem was that I employed a lawyer, which I didn't realize at the time, who was actually an associate on various committees of my ex-wife's lawyer. And what he did was he went against pretty much all of my instructions in writing. I asked him five times not to do things. Mm. And one thing in particular was I had 2.5 months with which to do an appeal towards the custody. And I said, wait, let's get the evidence together and make a proper appeal. Mm. And he went ahead in 2 days and just put the appeal in. And not only that,
wasted opportunity. How infuriating.
He didn't actually cancel the previous verdict. You have to actually suspend the previous verdict in order for to be able to get an appeal. And he didn't do that, I believe, deliberately, because he was one of the best custody and child lawyers in France.
So he should have known better legally.
He absolutely should have known better. And as soon as he did it, I heard from someone else that it had been done wrongly. Mm. And I actually went to him 3 or 4 times by email and said, you've done it wrongly, this is what you should have done, and he denied it. So I've actually reported him to the bar in France, to the chief lawyer, and we'll wait for the outcome. But it doesn't actually change the decision. There is no appeal in France. The decision in France is final, and they're actually trying to make it criminal and put me in contempt of court and try to get me arrested here in Dubai for anything that they can. Whereas the boy, you know, is free. As far as I'm concerned, he's free. He can go, come. I had 18 months of WhatsApps and emails trying to prevent the domestic problem that was happening at home, trying to prevent that and trying to say that it had to stop. Unfortunately, it never did. But now I'm cut off from the two younger children. I think at the way that it stands, I won't see them until they're adults.
And Charles, putting the legal side aside, she's blocking communication across all formats. Are there anyone else that you could contact to you know, then communicate to them on your behalf? How is that working?
Some of them in the French family were trying to contact and keep in touch, and actually most of those have been cut off now as well from the children. It's very difficult for my parents and you know, their their aunts and things.
Yeah, it's a loss for them too. But I guess, and I'm not a psychologist, mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, just speaking as a mother, as we discussed earlier, they are going to know in the future
absolutely.
That their mother was keeping them away from you. Mm-hmm. They will realise that despite her efforts, you were there. And I think the most important thing is that you keep on trying, you keep on pushing communication across all channels that you can and trying to keep evidence of that so that you take the high road, for want of a better phrase.
Absolutely. And right now, the younger ones feel completely defenseless. So they cannot take any action into, you know, expressing their needs. But they will be old enough one day to make up their mind. And this is why it's so important for you to keep records of all your attempts to be with them. And most importantly, to have emotional support for you and your child that is with you here, because it's probably very distressing for both of you to be separated from the little ones.
It is, but how can I contact them if there's no telephone and I can't get through to them anyway? Until they're teenagers and are really free, it's very difficult, because if I go to France, I will be arrested. So I can't actually go, I can't see them. All I can do is send them. I bought a PS4. For the elder boy and for the younger boy, so that they could both play together, you see. But she's made that very difficult. She wouldn't pay the €5 that would mean they could play online and this sort of thing. But they have played once or twice. And, you know, I bought him new games for that. And that's the only way that I can sometimes keep in touch, really, is to communicate and leave a little note with something that I would buy on Amazon or something like that. You know,
communicating that way. Have you thought about writing a diary for yourself in terms of your own sanity, but also in terms of really keeping a bit of evidence there as well, which can stand up legally in lots of situations? I'm a big fan of keeping a diary, I think, for kind of your own.
Also for the children to have access to later on.
Exactly.
The dates and everything, that this is what I attempted to do on this day. I attempted to contact you. This is what I did with the lawyer and so on. So they know that you have not abandoned them. Because, you know, at such a young age, they cannot understand the malicious behavior. They only know that daddy is no longer here.
And listening to her,
yes, absolutely.
Listening to only her side of the story.
Of course, absolutely.
It is a very classic case of parental alienation that we're talking about here, Charles. And I am so, so sorry that you're going through this. And I think, as Sabine said, making sure that you get the emotional support that you need so you can stay strong for the children. And having someone impartial to talk to as well. You know, you've obviously got the legal side. You've got family on both sides. Everyone has an agenda, everyone has their own thoughts, but you need someone that's a safe space for you to get angry, say what you need
Absolutely.
To say, and you really feel like you're being supported as well. Do keep us updated on this, Charles, and we'll send over Sabine's details as well to you privately in case you wanted to get in touch for someone to talk to. Wishing you all the very best, and
thank you, and
sincere thanks for coming
I
on to talk about this afternoon.
Might have already met my eldest.
We might have.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Wishing you all the best, Charles. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Talking about parental alienation this afternoon on The Couch. Lots of messages coming in, and we'll come to them after this. It's On The Couch this afternoon. It's your weekly dose of therapy. I am joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist and the co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. This is your chance to get some free advice, to have your questions or concerns addressed by an expert, or even just to have your say. We're talking this afternoon about parental alienation, a really difficult topic, and actually something that is far more common than I think a lot of us realise. Talking about a parent turning children against the other parent. This could be, as you said earlier, in an intact marriage.
Yes, absolutely.
But more commonly when divorce and separation.
Yes.
We were joined earlier on the phone by Charles, who's having a very, very difficult and complicated time with his ex-wife and children. Mohammed's texted in saying, "All my heart and sympathy to Charles. I'm a father of two wonderful children and I cannot even imagine the horror he is going through. Wishing you all the best." If you'd like to have your say or come on to share your story, do get in touch. A question here, and they can be anonymous. We know it's a a sensitive subject this afternoon, so if you'd rather not put your name on, of course, we understand, and that's absolutely fine. A message asking you to be in relation to dealing with parents' problems and fights. Is it both old and young children who should be spared, or do adult children have to take responsibility and try to resolve issues too?
Wow. No, I mean, it's better if they don't, but as parents grow older, they are more inclined to share with their adult children, but that does not mean that the adult children should be the ones to resolve the problems. They should also be protected, but usually, I mean, it's more common that the adult children have been parentified since their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rarely that they only are exposed to this during adults. They've been probably exposed to this since the beginning.
I mean, I guess adult children are more emotionally equipped. If a divorce happens when that child is in their late teens or 20s, they're going to be much more aware, but they still should not be exposed or dragged into the nitty-gritty of a divorce.
A lot of children, even at a very young age, you know, when they come to therapy as adults, they tell me, I wish my parents were divorced when I was younger, so I didn't have to live through their conflict. So not all divorces are ugly.
No, and know? I think...
Sometimes it's highly recommended to separate them to live together miserably.
You know, we think of divorce as being a tragic thing that happens, but ultimately a divorce is the end of an unhappy marriage, and that's actually... Yes. Should be, in a lot of cases, a good positive starting point for both people.
It's actually the way you go about it that could be damaging, mm-hmm. not the fact that you're separating.
A question here saying, hi, great topic. In a child's mind, is there a difference between divorce and separation?
Tricky question, because, you know, a child's mind is not time bound. Separations are usually a transition phase. Divorces are more final. Ultimately, what the child is thinking is that mommy and daddy no longer love each other, and does that mean that they won't love me anymore? So, you know, the technical terms are not relevant. It's the insecurity and the instability of the situation that is quite harsh on children.
Okay. Any questions for Sabine, do get in touch on mental health topics and especially parental alienation syndrome. We're joined on the phone now by Mark. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, not bad. How are you, more to the point? And how can we help this afternoon?
Hi. Yeah, no, I think I've caught the tail end of this whole conversation that you're having on the radio today, because I just jumped in my car from work.
Hi.
And
drive safe.
I was listening to the previous... No, I pulled over now.
Good man.
I was listening to your previous caller and the issues that he's having with his ex-partner and his children and mm-hmm. contacts. I've experienced pretty much exactly the same over the last 5 years.
Wow, 5 years.
And I've been aware of the whole parental alienation sort of theory the last couple. In the UK, by the way, I'm actually a mental health social worker.
So you're coming to this with a bit more of a sophisticated outlook than most of us.
Yeah. So it was very interesting to hear his issues, and it was just some kind of advice to give back to him, really.
Absolutely, tell us.
Once you read into it and you actually understand what's going on, and you can comprehend and understand that your ex-partner actually pretty much doesn't even realise probably that she's what harm she's doing and what she's creating, that you can't manage her, but you can manage your own feelings around it and pick your battles, it really, really helps. Now, I come out of a marriage of 14 years with 5 children, and I left and come to Dubai to fix myself, and in that time, going back to the old professionals that I used to work with, and actually being diagnosed with PTSD myself, and having to manage those symptoms, I really, really, really struggled until it was actually my new partner that one day came across parental alienation. And I started to read a lot of it.
Real light bulb moment. Kind of,
it was a light bulb moment, absolutely. And suddenly, just to take away 25% of my frustration, because suddenly, it's almost like when you get a diagnosis, it's like, phew, there's something there.
Putting a name on it can help you address it.
Absolutely. And just having that, and I'm so pleased. I think I messaged into the radio maybe a couple of years ago and said, has anyone ever talked about parental alienation? Because I wanted to see it, you know, see it in the theatre and understand what people's thoughts were around it. But as a theory, it's a really great thing to read on and give you understanding that it's very difficult to try and take charge of it and have an understanding. But if you can understand that your partner doesn't really understand that they're doing it themselves, it gives you a bit of peace. Does that make sense?
It does. What advice would you give to Charles, or indeed anybody that's at the receiving end of this kind of issue?
I would say pick your battles. You can't win all of them. Communication is key. I totally get it. And to be shut off, I wasn't allowed to have the landline telephone, and only my eldest daughter at the time had a mobile phone that we were able to WhatsApp. But if that was taken away, because let's say she'd misbehaved and she was grounded and the phone was taken away, I had to rely on my eldest daughter. Now, at the time when I left, she was just coming up 13. She's 17 and a half now, so it has become easier.
Mm-hmm.
But with her younger siblings, she was the channel to get access to the younger one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always a reminder, please give my love to the others, please let them know Daddy said hello. And it was all that kind of thing that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to bear with it. And even though you may not be at fault, it is a really difficult thing to bite your lips sometimes and not want to go in there and threaten with lawsuits and go down the road of having to go to professionals. It really is pick your battles. What is it that you're trying to achieve? And work on that one thing. Mm-hmm. And know that it's not going to change overnight. It's taken me 5 years now to get an open communication flow to my children, and it's been a very, very difficult 5 years. I'm not going to say it's been easy at all by any means. You've just got to take your time, pick your battles, and know it will be okay.
Mark, thank you.
It will be okay.
Really, really appreciate that. You've coming through the other side and sharing some really positive advice for anybody out there. And all the very best to you and your five kids for
Thank
the
you.
Future. Have a great afternoon. Cheers. I'm joined by Spien Scaff, clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, to guide us through the topic of parental alienation syndrome. Most importantly, to answer your questions and address your concerns. Lots of messages coming in and lots of calls too on this topic. So it's fair to say that kids need both parents. They do not, however, benefit and indeed can be harmed when one of their parents portrays the other in a relentlessly negative light. They do not need parents who fight their way through divorce and post-divorce. They are harmed when parents put them in the middle of their power battles. They are harmed when a parent uses them to accomplish their own angry agenda, ignoring the needs of a child. I'm going to play you a clip now. This is Emma, now 14, and she was 7 when her parents divorced. Over the next 5 years, her father succeeded in turning her and her siblings against their mother. This is her talking on the Victoria Derbyshire programme.
It's the impact on the child that can be the most damaging. 14-year-old Emma was 7 when her parents divorced. Over the next 2 years, she was severely alienated from her mother by her father.
My brother went away from home to my dad's because my dad was saying he could give them everything he wanted and he wouldn't get in trouble for anything. And when he went away, me, my brother and my sister, we'd never been separated, so it was if my brother's going, I want to go, because we were siblings and siblings stick together. So I went and my sister followed.
For a time, the kids had contact with their mum, but that was soon stopped.
He'd ring up and say, oh, the kids are busy, we're going to do something, they can't see their mum today. And my mum would be already halfway there and she'd get the phone call to say that we're busy and that we can't see her.
Did you know that at the time?
No. At the time, all we knew was that my mum had let us down and that she'd been out drinking on the night before and that she had a hangover, so she couldn't be bothered to come. And it was just what we were lied to.
When your dad would say things to you like, oh, your mum's got a hangover, she's not coming today, what did you think?
I thought that my mum was never like that, that she's not that type of person, but if that's what my dad's saying, I believe him, that she's a liar, that everything that's happened is her fault, that she doesn't love us, that she's being a bully towards him and us, and that's why we've behaved the way we have.
One day in 2013, Emma got an unexpected message from her mum.
She's saying that she loves me, that she's been made out to be this person when she's not. She sent me this picture of me, my brother and my sister when we were little. It just made me think, why would my mum send me this if she didn't?
You didn't know at the time that you were being alienated?
No. With me only being 9 and until the age of 12, I didn't know. I was not aware. I was threatened with all sorts by my father. I turned around and I told him I want to see my mum, and he said, no, if you carry on the way you're behaving, you'll be put into a foster home, care home, because we won't be able to look after you anymore.
Over the next few months, Emma ran away from her father's home twice and headed for her relatives. Eventually, she was reunited with her mum for good.
And as soon as I went in, the police was phoned to report that I'm not missing. And then I was put on the phone to my mum, and that's when I first heard my mum speak to me after 3 years. How can this man be a father? How can he look after a young child if he's done this? It was a terrible experience. And I tell other children to follow what your mind says, not what you're made to believe.
That was 14-year-old Emma, not her real name, talking about the impact her father's parental alienation had on her life and that of her mother as well. Really emotive subject there, Sabine. Mm-hmm. And I think it really does speak to that. It's in essence that that's such betrayal of trust, that children are so vulnerable, are not emotionally equipped to deal with very adult topics.
Absolutely. And it's very true what she says at the end, that follow your own mind, not what you're made to believe. Ultimately, children know who is the healthy parent and who's the parent who's manipulating. When they're small, they're just afraid to lose the love and the care and the connection. So it's like a trauma bond. It's like when you are in a hostage situation, the Stockholm syndrome, you know, but you can't defend yourself. Then you collide with the rationale of the person who's holding you hostage as means of protection. But ultimately, all the families, I mean, from my experience that I've worked with,
Coming into the clinic at the moment with this. Is this something you see
least once a week?
Wow,
one family a week with similar.
And that's a family who's recognized that there are issues and they have a need to get professional help.
Yes, so it's absolutely
very widespread.
Yes, very. But there's no awareness, unfortunately. And it's so subtle that people don't recognize that it happens. That's the sad part. This is why there needs to be awareness that this could be happening.
Can we talk about the long-term effects on a child who has been involved in this kind of dynamic? What issues could they be facing in the future?
Of course, post-traumatic stress disorder, attachment issues, because who do you trust after that? If your own parent has betrayed you, who can you trust in the world? Substance abuse, alcoholism, so many, it's the variety of disorders that can happen is quite wide. Any mental health disorder, you know, could be triggered after this, but mainly it's the PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
And if anyone's out listening thinking, I'm in this situation now, or I'm now worried about the impact it could be having on my child, what could they be doing?
As parents, we must refrain from, you know, having our own agenda and trying to deal with the issue with the partner, not through the children.
Mm-hmm. Stop weaponizing.
Easy. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's so easy to convince a child of something because they trust you and they care for you. So they'll do anything to please you. So it's very easy to tell them how to feel about a specific situation, even if it goes against their inner knowing, their inner feeling about it.
And I know we're talking a lot this afternoon about the targeted parents, and we've had people sharing their stories, but there could well be many people out there who think, do you know what, I'm actually doing that. I'm perpetuating lies. I'm using my children. And hopefully this will be a reality check on
Absolutely.
That behavior as well.
The targeted parent eventually contributes somehow to the alienation because they become a kind of... their contribution is because they are rejected so badly by the child that they feel so hurt that they reject back. Some of them, this is what happens, they give up on the child.
It becomes a perpetuating situation.
Yes, they give up on the child. That's why, you know, what Mark said, the fact that, you know, pick your battles, maintain composure. You can be very inclined to retaliate in horrible ways, similar mm-hmm. ways, but this will not be helpful.
You need to keep your character pure.
Yes.
Charles came on the phone earlier and shared his story, and we've had some really fantastic messages of support. A message here saying, please send this to Charles. Open a closed group on social media or an email address devoted to your boys exclusively. Send your thoughts there regularly, inspirational messages about the day you will reconnect and how exciting it will be. That's how you will recover all the days that you are missing being together. Give them passwords and let them read it when they can. Another thought, there's always a way to turn the law the other way around if the truth is on your side. So I'm wishing you to find an excellent lawyer who can help you with that. God bless you and your boys. Stay strong. Another message, another suggestion coming in saying open a YouTube account and post videos on there so you can share what you're experiencing with your son, and hopefully that will get to them at some point. It might not be in the near future, but it'll certainly be evidence.
It's a long battle, of course.
And Mark is saying 5 years to get to this point. We'd love to hear from you this afternoon on the couch to share your experiences. Perhaps you're a child of a divorced family and want to share your good or bad stories. Stay with us. We're talking about parental alienation syndrome this afternoon, when one parent turns the children against the other parent. It's common, much more common than you think, both in marriages and those who are separating and getting divorced. And actually, PAS Awareness Day is coming up on April 25th. If you search for the hashtag #BubblesWithLove, you can find more information on Instagram. So this is about, it's an intentional act, it can be a subconscious act. And I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist and the co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Sabine, I'm just wondering, as we said earlier, there'll be people who are thinking, okay, that's what my ex did with my kids. But there might well be people out there who are going through a divorce or a separation or in an unhappy relationship who might be doing this themselves and perhaps didn't even realise it until today.
Yes,
what are the subconscious acts, words, non-verbal actions that we should be looking out for?
Well, first, let's take a look at the intentional acts. So criticizing or diminishing the other parent in the presence of the child, which means, because as a child, you're part of two. So if you are doing that to the other parent, you are also indirectly doing it to the child, because the child identifies with mm-hmm. that part of the parent. Destroying items in the house that...
Ooh.
Belong.
Like chopping heads off photos,
yes,
and wedding.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
Restricting the parent from access to the house if they're coming to pick up the child, not allowing them to come in. This is very scary for a child, you know, because they start viewing the parent as dangerous.
I see. So in terms of that, it's not safe for them to be in the
exactly.
home.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Absolutely. And not allowing the child to see the parent, you know, coming up with an excuse. They're busy, they're sick, they can't make it today.
So being obstructive.
Yes. And choosing alternative babysitters other than the spouse, you know, you're going away instead of, you know, allowing the children to spend the weekend with the father, you call your friend to come in and stay with the kids.
Which really kind of devalues your partner as a parent.
Absolutely. This is about making the children hate and fear the other parent, the targeted parent. Some of the unconscious behaviors is when, for example, the child is visiting and you're completely indifferent and neutral, not even friendly. And then allowing
it's super passive aggressive, basically.
Yes, absolutely. And then allowing the child to decide if they want. So it's like, okay, if you want, go. And then having that body language that is disapproving, you know? Or, you know, convincing the child that if you don't do that, your father will take us to court. And, you know, you have to go visit.
So really positioning them as a villain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So visiting the father becomes like a punishment. Not like something that you do out of love and out of care.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things we can do without knowing, specifically in body language. Again, you know, planting a seed, your facial expression, your tone of voice when you're...
The eye roll, the sigh.
Yes, yes. Or like this.
That kind of thing.
Like being sarcastic and cynical.
Okay.
It's very, very... You know,
and kids pick up on these things.
They do, starting a very early age.
And
they
how
do.
Can a child who's in that situation, how can their behaviors How can it all manifest through the ages of these children?
You know, as a toddler, there's this fearfulness and anxiety that comes when you're separating from the primary caregiver. You don't reach your developmental milestones on time. There is aggressive behavior in, for example, nursery or school. When you're a bit older, again, you notice that the grades are dropping. The child no longer wants to be involved in social activities. There's so withdrawal and isolation. Okay. There's also, you know, when you're a teenager, you kind of become the parent, the adult at home that buffers between the two, so you take care of them. And you also consider yourself as completely self-reliant because you've learned through the years that you cannot rely on these two because they're killing each other. Mm-hmm. So you become completely independent.
Far earlier than you really should.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you so much for your insights and expertise this afternoon. And some final words for anybody who's going through this.
There is support out there. Do not feel isolated. And you need to be supported. Otherwise, it's very, very frustrating and it's an isolating experience. And you start feeling that there's no support, but there is, and it's more common, and you need to be verbal about it, and you need to express your needs.
Okay, Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
I'm Helen Farmer. Really enjoyed having you with us this afternoon. Thank you for all your messages, your calls, your vulnerability and your bravery here on the Couch this afternoon. Have a good one.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.